Austria, Bosnia, Botswana, Cameroon, Caribbean, Cuba, Dominican Republic, El Salvador, Finland, Israel, Korea, Malaysia, Mozambique, Norway, Poland, St. Lucia, United Kingdom.
Greetings, netizens around the world. Plan is once again listening to the technology show for Generation E. Mick Williams Cyberline coming at you around the world via the internet, coast to coast via satellite on the USA Radio Network. By the way, I want to tell you about a show. It's going to be a one-hour special premiering on the National Geographic channel. Looks like this Monday, April 16th, 9 p.m. Eastern. And it is on the National Geographic Channel. It's called A Man Among Wolves, the story of Don Imus' career. This is a story about a guy named Sean Ellis who's given up everything to take a daring and unorthodox approach to understanding wolves even more. So he's living with Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson. No, he's actually living with wolves. Living and behaving like them, howling, licking and snarling like them, even eating carcass meat like them.
You got to see the promos.
Like Al. No, it's a different movie. Never mind. Yeah, Man Amongst Wolves, National Geographic Channel. Anyway. Said the Don Imus story on it, didn't it?
Looked like it.
Wow. I saw this neat little thing. I got to tell you about this. This is from the New York Times, from the London Journal. Do you believe that somebody out there has actually created a formula for the perfect bacon sandwich? They've decoded, you know, like they decoded the human genome. Somebody has decoded the formula for the perfect bacon sandwich. Mm. As I was saying before in the first hour, just to give you a little hint. Should it be slithery or scrunchy? Glutinous or grilled? The answer, British scientists say, may be divined in a formula. And it is this, N equals C plus FB times CM times FB times TC plus FB times TS plus FC times TA. That is the scientific answer to the question, what makes the perfect bacon sandwich? And no, it's not April 1st. Researchers at Leeds University spent more than 1,000 hours testing 700 variants on the traditional bacon sandwich, which many Britons, by the way, refer to as a bacon buddy. Eschewing the term sandwich, said to have been coined to honor the 4th Earl of Sandwich's habit of eating meat between slices of bread around 1762. Weird one. He liked to have Spam sandwiches as a coat and a Coke, as I recall. Have that one. See how you feel after about 4 hours.
Yeah.
It's not that bad. It's one of my favorites for a while, in fact. For Britons, buddies come in a variety of guys. Chip buddies, that's French fries between slices of bread. Crisp buddies, ditto with the potato chip. Or even sugar buddies, which are self-explanatory. None are viewed as especially helpful, by the way. There are some finer points in the language, if not the cuisine. A sandwich containing sausages, for instance, is likely to be referred as a sausage sarnay. While sausages served with mashed potatoes are called bangers and mash. There is no easy explanation for this. Even the bacon buddy itself, though alliterative, is sometimes etymologically challenged, as in a recent posting on the website of the Yorkshire Post relating to the study at Leeds University. Perhaps another few minutes on research would have told them that a buddy is a slice of buttered bread with a topping. A bacon sarnay is what they are describing, says a contributor who signed himself Joey Pica. But Graham Clayton, who led the research, and the endeavor has been an earnest attempt commissioned by the Danish Bacon and Food Council. I'm not kidding about this, folks. The British subsidiary of a Danish pig producers organization to determine what degree of crispiness and crunchiness made the perfect sandwich. Company's announcement of the research last Sunday made no reference to other criteria like cholesterol, carbohydrates, or other dietary attributes of the perfect buddy. Chloe Joint, a spokeswoman.
Well, they would be mutual exclusive.
Yes, they would. Chloe Joint, a spokeswoman for Danish Bacon's public relations company, Porter Novelli, declined to say how much the study cost. The research combined four types of cooking using grills, pans, and ovens, three kinds of oil, and four types of bacon, smoked, unsmoked, streaky, and thick cut, to establish the preferences of 50 tasters in such matters as the body's tactile and oral crunchiness. The study also considered a broad range of condiments, like ketchup and brown sauce and spreads. It concluded that the best bacon buddies were made with crisply grilled, not-too-fat bacon between thick slices of white bread. And then they shouted, "Eureka!" We often think that it's the taste and smell of bacon that consumers find mostly attractive, Dr. Clayton said in a news release, but our research proves that texture and sound is just, if not, more important. In a telephone interview, he acknowledged that tasters made comments about fat. If there was too much fat from the cooking process, that was a turnoff for people, he said. Leathery bacon was a no-no, too, he added. We are programmed to avoid leathery food, as old and not very good, he said. That wisdom does not seem to prevail, however, among some of the more basic vendors of bacon buddies at roadside halts and cafes generally known as greasy spoons to denote their customary modes of cooking and hygiene. In the experiment, some of the tasters sampled between 4 and 6 bacon sandwiches a day for 3 or 4 weeks. And so the formula evolved to establish the amount of force in the bite, expressed in newtons, remember newtons, and the level of noise expressed in decibels, to make the perfect crunch. Ideally, Danish Bacon said, 0.4 newtons should be applied to crunch the sandwich, creating 0.5 decibels of noise. The formula uses these values. Remember the formula I read you? N equals force of newtons. FB is the function of the bacon type. F is the function of the condiment or filling effect. T over S is the serving temperature, and T over C is cooking time. TA is the time taken to insert the condiment or filling, CM is the cooking method, and C represents the breaking strain in newtons of uncooked bacon. It's not a hoax, Dr. Clayton said, acknowledging that a few days ago, on April 1st, to be precise, it might have been taken to one.
Okay, so crispy, lean bacon on white bread.
Yes.
And it took them 1,000 hours to figure this out.
Yes.
I could have told them immediately.
But remember now this is scientific. You probably would have been into it and not realized that it's 0.4 newtons applied to the crunch of the sandwich, creating only 0.5 decibels of noise.
I wouldn't have needed to.
I would fine-tune that just a little bit.
Mm-hmm. 700 variations?
It's the crispy, lean bacon on a baguette.
Well,
not just ordinary white bread.
We didn't use that.
I don't like crunchy bacon.
And how many scientists were there?
I like charred bacon.
How many scientists were there?
See, there's a picture on that site of the English bacon, and it does not look anything like American bacon.
Well, I look at it this way, man. I like my bacon so charred and crispy, you got to, like, bring the dental records out to figure out whose pig it was that was, you know, put into the Oscar Mayer slice.
See, I don't like the crunchy. I like it just done. I don't want it crunchy. I want it soft.
It's good.
No crunch.
Farmland is the best bacon in America to use, let me tell you, hands down.
So you don't believe in science then? Huh, Jesse?
He probably thinks pigs didn't fly to the moon. Or bacon sandwich ended up on an Apollo flight.
There is no meat on the moon or ever been meat on the moon.
You don't know that.
I know that.
There's cheese up there. You got to have something to go with it.
You know, for every scientific fact we've got out there, we've got Jesse to dispute it.
That's right. We'll be right back.
Exploring science in the sea. When a fish known as Torpedo californica locates its prey, it glides in slowly. When it's within a few inches, it lunges, enfolds the prey like a tortilla wrapping around a piece of skirt steak, then stuns it with an electric shock of up to 50 volts. Torpedo californica may sound like a creature from a sci-fi thriller, but it's really a type of ray. The Pacific Electric Ray, that's found from Baja to British Columbia. It's among dozens of fish that use electricity to find their way through the water, locate and stun their prey, and fight off danger. The most famous is the electric eel, a freshwater fish in South America. Its shock is strong enough to stun a grown man. But other electric fish live in the oceans and seas, including more than a dozen species of rays and the family of fish called stargazers. Stargazers hide on the bottom until their prey comes close. Then, with a jolt of electricity from near their eyes, they stun their prey and gobble them up. Electric fish generate their charges through bundles of muscle fibers that produce chemical reactions, like the cells in a car battery. The fibers can discharge up to several hundred times a second. The Pacific electric ray and other strongly electric fish have large electric organs for knocking out prey and chasing away predators. But other species of weakly electric fish have smaller electric organs that help them navigate, identify prey, and even communicate as they charge through the depths. Science in the Sea is a production of the University of Texas Marine Science Institute at Port Aransas. We're on the World Wide Web at scienceandthesea.org. I'm Holly Brawley.
Hi there. McWilliam Sarli with you. Holly Brawley.
Holly.
She had a brother named Hurley. Hurley Burley? Or... Oh, well, I'm sorry about that, folks. I was hoping to have some time to have introduced you to that. We're starting a new segment called Science in the Sea. Remember we used to do Stardate? Well, now we do Science in the Sea. And I was so hoping there that when the music started, I was going to give you a chance to introduce it to you. But it didn't work out that way. And Trickshot is like, what the frack is this? And I'm thinking, oh, he's going to think, well, at KSCV, they're putting something else over him now. But no, that is going to be a new staple at this time with Cyberline. So it leads into the space update.
Space, the final frontier.
What was her name, Hurley Girly? What?
I'm Jesse Storm, and here's your space update on Nick Williams' Cyberline.
It's a hell of a name for a fish, wasn't it?
The great torpedo for the kidding fish of California. The great state of California.
Almost.
It's educational. Go ahead.
Almost 3 months later than originally planned, NASA will try to launch Atlantis on the first space shuttle mission of the year in early June. NASA managers had been studying for weeks whether to finish repairing the tank and use it for Atlantis's mission or swap it out with another tank. It took them weeks to figure this out. With the extra...
That's some paid engineers for you, boy, how do you get them slide rolls?
Meters or feet?
Yeah.
With the extra time, NASA engineers...
The bolts come out, the tank goes down. The bolts go in, the tank goes up.
With the extra time, NASA engineers also decided last week to inspect Atlantis propulsion lines to make sure a silicone rubber mold material wasn't left behind in them. A small amount of the material, which is used to check for cracks in the lines, was found in one of the engines during Discovery's mission last December, and another engine that flew on Discovery last July. The new launch date for Atlantis now will be no earlier than June 8th.
They're finding more crap in them engines on the shuttle than they are in a Soyuz capsule.
That's kind of scary, leaving stuff in the propulsion line. You
and,
know?
And you think about flying by the seat of your pants that the Russians have done for the last 38 years.
A cascade of events triggered by human error caused the battery to fail on the Mars Global Surveyor last year, but the problems can be traced to September 2005 when a routine update to onboard computers caused inconsistencies in the spacecraft's memory. Engineers trying to fix the problem sent incorrect software commands that didn't catch them and didn't catch the mistakes because the existing procedures to do so were inadequate.
In more ways than one.
Shortly before it failed, It also found stunning evidence that liquid water recently coursed through Mars. The discovery, which still needs to be confirmed, raises the possibility that the planet may have an environment conducive to life.
Yeah, stunning discovery as it plowed right into the water and reentry.
Launched in 1996, it was one of the oldest of six different active probes on the Martian surface or circling the planet.
And now there are five.
NASA astronaut Sunita Williams will run the Boston Marathon on Monday, but from 210 miles above the Earth. That will allow the 41-year-old U.S. Navy commander to run at the same time as her sister, a fellow astronaut, and about 24,000 others who are expected to face heavy rain and headwinds on their way to Boston's Back Bay.
Now, wait a minute. I've got to stop you there. Now, here's the question. Is she going to run it like in the regular spacesuits like they wear on the shuttle? Or is she going to run it in the jog bra and, like, the shorts and have, like, 838 little, you know, tag number on
her? Her little number?
Her little number.
I think she's just going to be in a spacesuit.
Okay, good luck with that.
Williams qualified for the Boston race by finishing Houston's marathon in 3 hours, 29 minutes, and 57 seconds last year. But that was before she left on the shuttle Discovery in December to join the space station crew. As you may remember from last week's update, she was originally slated to come back to Earth on the shuttle Endeavour in early July, but that trip is likely to be postponed for weeks due to snags encountered during the preparations of the Atlantis shuttle flight due to hail damage.
And engineers not knowing how to unlatch a bolt.
Exactly. Now scheduled for no earlier than June, the delays put Williams in line to break the U.S. endurance record for continuous time in space.
Let's see. Was it Eileen? Not Eileen Collins. Who was the other one? She was a middle-aged woman that was like the longest one that served on the ISS. So she's going to break that person's record. I cannot remember her name because Eileen Collins was a shuttle pilot. Well, I can't remember her name. I mean, everybody was joking about her when she came back, asking her if she had any effects of zero G, and she was standing at the podium and she's kind of like dangling off the caricature that they do the cartoon. You just see her legs and her feet. You know, this is the effects from being long-term in space. No. I can't remember her name, but she – in fact, I've got that cartoon back in my office on the door of my cabinet. I'll have to go back and look.
According to state media reports, China launched a satellite Wednesday to begin a 3-year mission surveying the world's oceans to monitor sea color and temperature. The craft is the second ocean surveying satellite fielded by China, and its mission will include pushing Chinese development of ocean resources, aiding the construction of new harbors, ports, and monitoring ocean pollution. The satellite replaces an earlier craft that stopped working in 2004. China plans more than a half dozen additional launches this year to carry government and commercial satellites into orbit. China will also send its first lunar orbiter to the moon in a launch planned for this fall. Now, there's a lot of controversy going around with China sending a lot of stuff up because when they blew up their satellite a few months ago. So now that's gotten the U.S.'s attention of what China can do.
Oh, yeah, they're gonna erase history. They're going to go up there, going to knock down the American flag that's there by the limb and go, no, just us. what footprints? I don't know nothing about no footprints. Just us Chinese guys. No, you can't have no takeaways. Too far. We don't serve in your area.
That would be a $10 service fee.
The moon buggy only goes as far as the Marianas Trench.
Or they'll get up there, take a look at the moon, and find out that there's nothing on there.
No noodles, only green cheese. We don't go past the Sea of Tranquility for delivery.
And here's an update on Lisa Nowak. A police search of Lisa Nowak's car turned up bondage photos on a computer disk, British currency, and pills of an unknown type, according to documents released Tuesday by prosecutors in Orlando, Florida. Nowak is accused of trying to kidnap a rival for his space shuttle pilot's affections. Now, that's some...
Maybe she should have talked to that torpedo fish. Might have gotten away with it.
And in the trivia question, whom did the media refer to as the astronaut's personal physician?
Jose Jimenez.
No.
I'm close. It's either that or Bones McCoy.
No, there is no Bones, and there's no Spot.
No Jose.
Jose is in Walmart. You forgot about that.
No, he's on the board of the Astronauts Committee for Scholarships. And I'm not kidding about that one.
No, it's Dr. Charles E. Barry, known as Chuck Berry.
Oh, dude.
And that's your space update on Nick Williams Cyberline. I'm Jesse Storm.
Sorry we don't go past the Sea of Tranquility. We'll be right back.
TV tray I bought on eBay. My house is filled with this crap. Shows up in bubble wrap most every day. What I bought on eBay. Tell me why I need another pet. Is liable to snipe you with 2 seconds left to go. Whoa, got PayPal or Visa, whatever'll please ya, as long as I've got the dough. I'll buy your tchotchkes, sell me your watch, please.
Okay, welcome, Dallas. Seemed to have been a problem with the stuff. All right, you got that music ready? Let's do it. Okay, as you know, we had a drawing for the Hawaii Five-O Season 1 DVD. Back when we had everybody on to talk about the rollout, and we said that today was the day we'd be drawing the name. Amen, let's go a little bit. Everybody, get your guitars out, swing like the shadows. The Ventures did the jingle. So, you got your tickets? Got your pen and paper? Could it be you? I don't know.
It's me.
Not you. You're an employee.
Not me. I already bought mine.
All right, you ready? Here we go. Get the paper out here. The winner of the Hawaii Five-O Season 1 DVD drawing is Steve Lacombe, Houston, Texas. Hey!
All right.
Okay.
Now call in.
Yeah, call in Steve. He's probably the one night we draw him, he's not listening.
Probably.
You watch. He's doing his taxes, right? Anyway, Steve Lacombe of Houston listening to us on KVCE. Or no, I'm sorry, KSCV, the voice of Houston, AM 700. He says that a lot of times he listens to the web archive and wants to know, will we make this available as a podcast or download? Well, dude.
That's my question.
You just got a Hawaii Five-O Season 1 DVD. What the heck more do you want? Oh, and also, this is some time back, he said, good luck on the eBay bid for the art easel, which, by the way, I lost. It was $650. So anyway, Steve Lacombe of Houston listening to us on 700 KSEV. You are the winner, and we will send you an email this week to finalize everything, and then we will get that sent out to you. Anyway, speaking of the auction, I got four pictures of Jack Lord. Nice little haul. Everybody was going for the stuff that he signed. It was like $300 and $400.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I got the best of both worlds. I got pictures, but then he had this thing, I guess, in case he wanted to do a book or something later on. He could remember all these things. So he'd turn over the pictures and he'd write about them on the back. I have his handwriting about the pictures and what they were and little anecdotes on the back of the pictures.
That's pretty neat.
I've got them on DVD, or on DVD. I've got them burned to CD. I had them scanned the other day, so we're going to put them up on the website here probably in the coming week, and you can take a look at them. I'll probably have to scan them again because I did not scan the handwriting. But what was really cool is I picked them up. They sent them priority mail, opened it up, and they were in little folders because they were in lot 50, lot 49, or whatever. And they just took the folders and stuffed them in. And the first folder I opened up, I've never had this happen to me before, and this is so cool. They give you a certificate of authenticity, right, to prove that it's, you know, what it is. And you open it up, and there's this letter that says, to whom it may concern, you are the owner of said lot, blah, 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 blah. This came from the Jack and Marie Lord Estate in Honolulu, Hawaii. And it is signed and on stationary letterhead from the Bank of Hawaii in Honolulu. And I'm like, dude, it's like part freaking sweet. And the other half is, wow, this looks like something out of Hawaii Five-O. And they, you know, they'd go to the bank and, you know, I'd stamp some check as cash by Bank of Hawaii.
You know,
I got
these great pictures from Jack Lord.
But look at this Bank of Hawaii letter.
That's right. I'm going to scan it.
Keep this for all eternity. I got a picture of him in Climax, which is the big live show they used to do. Benefiting. Ironically, James Bond's Casino Royale. First time ever done on Climax. Barry Nelson, if you ever get Casino Royale now, the old 67 piece with David Niven and all that, they have this in the CD. You can watch it as it was back then from 54. Barry Nelson just died this weekend. Unknown complications. I think it might have been a heart attack. He was 89. He was the first James Bond.
Wow.
The Americanized version. He was known as Jimmy Bond. And then some years later, they started running with Dr. No, and of course, Sean Connery took over, and the rest is history. But yeah, there was a Climax episode that Jack Lord was in. Got a still photo from that. There was another one called Birth of an Anthem about the Star Spangled Banner. Got him in that. And I got two of those from Birth of an Anthem. And then a picture from Year of the Horse with Victoria Principal. With him and one of the other actors in Victoria Principal all together, leaning on a fence in Hong Kong or wherever it was they filmed it. It was one of those few ones they filmed outside of Hawaii, and was close to the end of the season run of the series. It was in there and pretty neat. So I didn't do too bad. I came out unscathed. Yeah, I wanted the easel. But then as the price went, I'm thinking, where am I going to put this thing? What am I going to do with it? How am I going to explain this? Can I give it to the Museum of Broadcasting in Dallas? Maybe, give it to the museum on loans. I don't have to worry about it in the house. What if it gets stolen? That's when I kind of let go. I got it. But I got a picture, an 8x10 of Adam West as Batman. Mm-hmm. It had nothing to do with the Jack Gord auction, but I got it. I'm writing to Adam and say, Adam, if I send you the picture, will you sign it? Come on, buddy, pal. Come on, come on, come on. And I'll either get, yes, for you, I'll sign it. Or, who the hell are you again? Get off my lawn. Sadly, I think I'm going to be going for number two.
What would be bad is if you get it sent out to him, and then he forgets about it, and you never see it again.
Picture? I don't know. Stop bugging me about your eBay picture. And get off my lawn. Still making up that list of taglines of how he picks up women. Hey, baby. Ever thought about defecting to the West? Sure, it was good in the Cold War days, but hey, those days are over, like Imus, and, times change. You have to get some new pickup lines. All right, we'll be right back. Picture, like a million of them all to myself. I think I'm turning. Yeah, I'm turning. Yes, I'm turning Japanese. I think I'm turning Japanese. Oh, Robin, I really think so. Oh, dear. McWilliam Cyberline with you. All right. Round table. Adam's going to go get some grog now.
Camelot. It's only a model.
So they said about the Batcave.
Don't tell him.
Well, on second thoughts, let's not go to Camelot. This is a silly place.
All right.
Okay. I'm finishing up the round table here. Couple of things. First, before I get to the Don Imus thing, because I want to see how you guys feel about this. There was some other thing that came through. What are your opinions? We'll talk about the FBI thing just real quick. You guys pretty much are of the opinion that the FBI has better things to do, right?
Yep.
Yep.
Okay. So, well, unanimous, only. Okay. So the virtual FBI jackboots need to go do something else.
Yep.
Yep. Did anybody hear about the Geek Squad incident?
Oh, yeah, I did hear a little bit about it.
About the guy who tried to set his his little video camera phone up in the shower and take a picture of two young girls while he was fixing their router problem while they were in the shower.
Young.
And they intercepted the little card and found it, and now the daughters and the mother are suing Best Buy and Geek Squad. What is this world coming to? This guy's 25 years old and thinks he can, get away with this. It's like, it kind of makes you wonder, who you're letting into your home sometimes. But I cannot believe that somebody is that stupid.
But why would they leave him unattended anyway?
Oh, you'd be amazed at people. I'm going to go lay by the pool. Here, you go clean the chimney.
I'm sitting right there.
I generally am in the house. I was, I had an air conditioner put in, and I had to have somebody watch while I was away from work. I'm not letting that go. Not at all. But I'm just amazed at some of the things that happen. And, of course, the Imus thing. It's like I said, man, I think he's going to end up somewhere. I think it will blow over. KCAA, which is in Loma Linda, we have the link still in the chat room. You can go over there and listen to the Best of Imus starting Monday. I tell you, I got a preference. I am on WERE in Cleveland, which the Reverend Al Shelton, Keeping It Real with Reverend Al, is on Mondays. There's a big difference between Al Sharpton and Don Imus, and one of them is this. Don has done a lot of charity work, raising money for the Imus Ranch, where cancer-stricken kids get to go, spend a good time, get their minds off of chemo and everything else. SIDS, research for SIDS, not to mention Deidre's been doing cancer research, a lot of other things. The bottom line is the Imus household has done over the last 30 years and raised a lot of money. And despite the people have spoken and have decided that Imus must go, boy, look at the money that came in Friday during the charity event that he was supposed to host on the radio. His wife and Charles McCord did it. Record numbers came
really?
In. Yeah. They had money coming in still, even after the show was gone. They have websites you can go into and contribute and still doing it. So, gee, all these people that, you know, scorned Imus, but boy, that charity money, that flew in pretty good.
Well, that's good. That's good to hear.
But then I look at Reverend Al Sharpton, and I go, okay, Jesse I give a little slack to, because I think he's had some scholarships, you know, to get kids through college and things possibly set up. Correct me if I'm wrong. But I think out of the two, a little more philanthropic with the Push Rainbow Coalition. But what contributions to society has Reverend Al done? Well, he's probably kept the restaurant industry going very well. You know, the money that he pays for those meals that he eats in those restaurants. Now, that said, Al has lost a lot of weight over the last couple of years. So, you know, the restaurants are doing okay. Or the textile industry, where he buys all those sharp clothes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's donated to the textile industry. Or the shoe industry, all those young kids overseas. The cheap labor, being able to keep them employed for all the snazzy shoes and shoe polish that Reverend Al has bought with the money of his charity. You know, he's probably taking off his taxes. You know, it's all part of cost of doing business for the charity. Not to mention his hair. You know, got to look good in front of the cameras. Got to get the stylist. Got to keep the stylist in the barbershops and, you know, that charity work going to keep them in a job. You know, because it takes a lot of work to make Al look good. Not to mention the tie industry. Oh, that's probably back to the subdivision of the textile industry. The jewelry industry, of course, the rings, the jewelry, everything that Al, you know, has bought. He's got to keep that charity going. And so I say to you, wow, that's a lot of charity work old Al's done. I'm really impressed. But I tell you what, I will never, ever, 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 ever forgive Al Sharpton. But what transpired here back January, February or so. And that was that three-ring circus spectacle they call a funeral for Soul Brother number one. The hardest working man in show business. I'm talking about the late, great James Brown. That was not a funeral for James Brown. That was a three-ring circus to allow Reverend Al Sharpton up on a podium and make himself look good.
That's not possible.
Well, that's what it was. So, you know, I not so much Imus. I can't forgive him for James Brown. But the whole thing here is this. When you put Imus up against the Reverend Al, despite what Imus said, yes, it was stupid. Yes, it was idiotic. Yes, he should have been suspended, but not fired. When the time comes to go on the hill up yonder, God, whatever you perceive him to be, Harry Thunderer, Cosmic Muffin, or other, the bottom line is this. Don is going to look really good in the fact of all the work that he's done. And quite frankly, I think Reverend Al has got some explaining to do. And the other thing that I think that Reverend Al has, I noticed that it's been a double standard in the fact of Reverend Al said a lot of things that nobody's called upon. But I noticed that this is all ironically happening right about the time the kids with the Duke College rape case were exonerated and all of the hurtful, hateful things that Reverend Al said about them. Notice Al hasn't been calling a press conference to apologize. Anybody see that? MSNBC?
The attorney general of the state.
Yeah,
actually came out and,
not
only said that they weren't were not guilty. He said that they were innocent.
Well, not only that, Nifong, who started this whole mess as the district attorney, that was the district prosecutor, even apologized.
Mm-hmm.
So if this man who rung them through hell and withheld evidence can apologize. And the district attorney can apologize. And the Rutgers girls accepted Don Imus' apology, which it should have been between them, the hell with everybody else. And if they said, we want him fired, no problem, I would have let him go. But everybody should have just cooled their heels until after the meeting, and they said, we accept his apology, let's get suspended and go on. But you know what? Everybody's either accepted or given an apology. Except Al. So,
and he
Al?
Ain't going to.
Al? Can you hear me, brother? Fellow W-E-R-E person in Cleveland there on 1300? Two words, Al. We're waiting. The words of the great immortal Orson Welles. For all my guys here, number six, Chris, Jesse, Bob, we remain as always, unlike Reverend Al, obediently yours. Good night.